This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there, and we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Uncertainty. Self-doubt. Stressing about not knowing where to start. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out, word art. Sorry, live, laugh, lovers. In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios. Radio 610 presents Pain and Pendergast.
Thank you to the dozens of you who pointed out to me that the Astros don't play tonight. They're off tonight because Minnesota's stupid and has the possibility of snowouts for their opening day. So they've got to leave an empty day there for their opening series. And so the Astros get a day off in Minnesota. My prize pick spot, I just read, Seth. I talked about how I was going to use some Astros tonight in my prize picks lineup. Yeah. Several people. Thank you for listening to The Spot, by the way, all you people. That's how advertising works. Now download the Prize Picks app and use my code 610. There is no Astros game for me to put into my lineup tonight. So thank you, all of you, for pointing that out to me.
No, I know, but you had been complaining about Minnesota not having an indoor stadium and the fact that they weren't playing on Friday just like 7 minutes before that.
I did. It wasn't 7 minutes. It was when we were talking about the Astros, like an hour ago. But yeah, I forgot. And so thank you. I'm just thanking everybody for reminding me of that and telling people I will do a Prize Picks lineup still, even without the Astros playing tonight. Okay. So there we go. Mock draft injection time. Let's do that. Maurice Jones-Drew, former NFL running back. He is working for the NFL Network now, and he's got his first mock draft out. Where have you been, Maurice Jones-Drew? The draft's in 3 weeks.
Yeah, you should be on your 18th mock draft.
Everybody else is on like version 9.0 or something right now.
Maurice Jones-Drew is usually good for some curiously against the grain takes.
Yeah,
that he stands by and they're informed and everything. He's not a wackadoodle about it.
Right.
But I'm curious to see exactly whether I'm going to call him like, hey, he's an ex-player, he knows what he's doing, or he's only got his job because he's an ex-player.
Yeah.
Where is he on the spectrum? Based on this one.
Well, we'll see. Let's find out, shall we? Maurice Jones-Drew mock draft with the 25th overall pick in the Maurice Jones-Drew NFL.com mock draft. The Houston Texans select the same player that is the most drafted player to the Texans right now in the mocks. He's going with the crowd here, Seth.
Yeah.
Josh Simmons, offensive lineman, Ohio State University.
Okay, all right. I'm gonna accuse him of being he only has his job because he's an ex-player. That's where I'll choose you. I'm starting to get annoyed at all these Josh Simmons projections to the Texans for a couple reasons. One is he's coming off a torn patellar tendon, and you can look good in workouts and everything all you want. We talked to Nick Caserio yesterday about Trent Brown's torn patellar tendon and how they treat that and handle it, and a big part of it is being able to do all the testing to see exactly, you know, how the one leg is in terms of strength to the other leg and all of that. And a lot of it has to also come down to, all right, a guy has a hard workout, how does he respond 2 or 3 days later?
Mm-hmm.
Same as it is with pitchers. You know, Lance McCullers had a good outing in Sugarland, but it's those next few days where you want to be sure there's no setbacks. I get really nervous about a torn patellar tendon and an offensive lineman. And then the other part of it with Josh Simmons is that I take with a grain of salt the various reports we've seen that, hey, he might have maturity concerns or things of that nature, because who knows, there's a lot of smoke this time of year. But for whatever it's worth, they certainly don't gush about him as a leader or anything the way they do about Ibuka, the wide receiver out of Ohio State. They certainly don't gush about him the way they do in Alabama about Tyler Booker, the guard. And I think the Texans really are, especially on the offensive line, going to be trying to be damn sure that they get the right kinds of guys in there.
Yeah.
So I'm skeptical. Now, again, maybe that's all just noise or whatever, but there is also an absence of gushing about his personality traits and whatever that doesn't seem like a Will Anderson type of dude.
Yeah.
So I'm skeptical that it'll be Josh Simmons.
Yeah, and yet there's 10 people saying Josh Simmons. I was listening to In the Loop yesterday. They had Brian Broaddus on, who works for our sister station up in Dallas. He's a former scout for the Packers. He was with the Packers when they won one of their Super Bowls. I don't know which one. Reggie called him a Super Bowl winning scout with the Packers. I'm not sure if it was the Aaron Rodgers or the Brett Favre Super Bowl, or maybe both. I really enjoyed listening to him yesterday. He's really good on the radio. He loves Josh Simmons. Holy crap, I probably should have gone and gotten the audio. I was listening to that while I was working out yesterday, and I'm going, man, like, let's go. Like, well, he really likes his film, you know?
Well, no, he is fluid.
Yeah.
He looks like a guy that you wonder why he didn't play defensive line. That he's that type of, he moves really, really well, and it's really easy to see the upside there. I don't know if he's got that same level of grittiness or toughness or whatever that embodies the swarm mentality, but the upside of him is very good. And he got better every year while he was at Ohio State, so he started off this year looking the best he's ever looked, but then got injured before he was able to face a lot of the really good competition. So I think that I think there are a lot of teams that are looking at him as like, okay, we might have some concerns about the injury, we might have concerns about other things, but getting him at 25 or 26 or 27 that's a good risk reward balance there, because he might actually be, when healthy, a top 10 caliber guy.
Who would you the Ohio State offensive lineman? Oh, by the way, Reggie's listening. Thank you. He was a scout during the Favre years back in the 90s. Brian brought us. It was a great segment. He was really good. You can find it on the Odyssey app on the In the Loop podcast. Josh Simmons or the other Ohio State offensive lineman that's been mocked to the Texans pretty frequently. Houston's own Donovan Jackson.
Bel Air High School, was it not?
Episcopal. Yeah. Episcopal High School.
Oh, Episcopal. So he's from Bel Air and he went to Episcopal.
Yep.
I like Donovan Jackson. And this is something I'll do, Sean. I'll be the brave one that stands up for this marginalized class of society.
Of people.
The duck-footed athlete.
Oh, yeah.
Because
discriminated against all the time.
They don't even disguise it. They don't even speak in code words or anything. They just flat out say, like, I don't know, he's duck-footed. Which is, I believe a lot of times people, they see a guy who runs kind of duck-footed, and they think, well, he can't possibly be a good athlete. He tests out pretty well by offensive guard standards as an athlete. He played tackle and played tackle when he had to move out for Ohio State because of injury, and played it way better than a lot of people expected, but most teams look at him as a guard in the NFL. I honestly, when it comes to interior offensive and defensive linemen, being duck-footed can be a source of strength, if anything, because you just watch anybody do an incredibly heavy deadlift. You know, you got your toes pointed outwards a little bit, or at least most people do. It's a powerful position. He plays with a lot of power. I like him a lot. I think he's got a lot of swarm characteristics to him. As a run blocker, especially, like, he plays with a flat back. He does a lot of things that are hard to coach. And I think he's not an awesome athlete, and I think there's some people that think, yeah, he's a slam dunk first round guard. There's others that think, I don't know, maybe this guy's a third rounder. I'd be excited about his upside. I like the way he moves.
Yeah, CJ Stroud's duck footed. He's fine.
Why would you ever draft a duck footed athlete from Ohio State? CJ Stroud. Well, what did they say about CJ Stroud? Yeah, I don't know if he can run or not. He's just, I don't know, something about him.
He, when he finally unleashed the beast in the postseason, he was basically Lamar Jackson. You couldn't, you couldn't tell the difference between C.J. Stroud. When did the Texans sign Lamar Jackson? That's what I said on that run that C.J. had in the Chargers game where he was zipping past people like he was in the HOV lane and everybody else is stuck in rush hour traffic, man. Duck-footed? Whatever. Whatever.
It is, I know. The people, they just talk about it right out in the open.
Yeah, man.
With no actual, they don't cite any evidence or anything about the hazards of being a duck-footed athlete.
That's right.
Now, I do, like, I feel like for an edge rusher, I'd rather have him be pigeon-toed than duck-footed.
It's the opposite, yeah.
Interior, yeah. I like duck-footed over pigeon-toed.
I need you to become a scout someday and watch you sell that to the room. Like, guys,
start talking about the ankle girth and everything.
Guys,
like that.
This is the torpedo bat of offensive line play. Duck footedness. I would be listening to that speech.
Who was the quarterback that the tight ends coach said was the only
Jeff
person
Driscoll.
More? Driscoll, yeah. Jeff,
I didn't even need you to get to the. That was like me hitting the buzzer on Family Feud two words into the question. Who was the tight ends coach that? Andy Bischoff. That was the name of the coach who said that Jeff Driscoll is more athletic than Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, we want to talk about somebody who I'm convinced definitely reads way too much into 40 times. That,
Andy
yeah,
Bischoff? Like,
yeah, because yeah. Jeff Driscoll was fast in certain capacities. It was
running straight.
Yeah, his kryptonite was having to turn at all.
Yes.
Like, he was fast as hell, unless he has to turn at all.
His kryptonite was running while there were other individuals who were tasked with tackling him, yes.
Yeah, the agility of a freight train.
Let's see here. A lot of thoughts on Josh Simmons and the Texans taking an offensive lineman in the first round. How many people went to Simmons' birthday party? Find that out before drafting him. That's a draft day reference.
I don't watch draft day this weekend. It's been long enough.
Please do. Yeah.
All right.
Or are you not going to? It sounded like you were about to, and then I got enthusiastic about it, and then you.
I just thought of somebody write something the other day about the part of draft day where apparently they aggressively trade up in the first round, and then start doing research on the player they traded up for.
Yeah, it's totally on draft stupid.
Day,
yes,
on draft day,
on draft day, like the entire movie takes place on draft day. It's just,
and they're doing a lot of stuff that in the real world they would have done 3 months ago.
Or there's a trade made later in the movie that would never happen, ever happen.
Yeah.
You need to watch it, and I'm gonna give you the warning label right now. It is totally dumb.
I just gotta enjoy it for what it is.
Yes. I know sometimes when things are illogical, that can frustrate you. This is an entire movie of things that are illogical. Like, it is dumb, makes no sense, but I think it is very well acted. The fact that it's actual NFL teams at the actual draft, like, is, you know, it's not like the
movie. Because they use the actual logos and everything. They didn't have to disguise it.
They filmed some of it at the draft. Guys sitting at their team's tables doing phone calls. Roger Goodell announces the picks.
Well, and Arian Foster is in it, too.
He's in it. He's one of the draftees. Yes. Yeah. I think if you can get over the stupidity, I don't know, text him. What do you guys, you listen every day. 713-572-4610. Do you think Seth will like the movie Draft Day? Plain and simple. Do you think he'll like it?
Are you trying to get healthier but have no idea where to start? Connect with a registered dietitian through Nourish and learn how to fuel your body in a way that actually works for you. Because eating better doesn't mean eating less. Take appointments with your dietitian online from home, plus message them anytime for extra support. And since Nourish works with hundreds of insurance plans like Blue Cross, Blue Shield, Aetna, and United, 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Ready to take control of your health? Get started at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapper jacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
Nerds!
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to Whole Foods Market. You know I'm all about eating fresh and finding quality ingredients, and that's exactly what Whole Foods delivers. Whether you're grabbing organic produce, high quality meats, or just a quick healthy snack, they've got you covered. Plus, they're all about sustainability and supporting local farmers, which I love. Next time you're grocery shopping, check them out. You'll taste the difference. Spring is the perfect time to refresh your table, and Whole Foods Market has everything you need. Hosting brunch? Picture this. Flaky, buttery quiche, crispy bacon, fresh berries, and of course, cold-pressed orange juice to brighten up your morning. And if you're in the mood for something fizzy, check out their seasonal Italian sodas. Berry blend and orange hibiscus are total must-tries. So whether you're planning a casual get-together or a full-on feast, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Make Whole Foods Market your destination for all spring gatherings.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Right, you can text the show, 713-572-4610. Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. We had Nick Caserio on earlier. I'm guessing you'll be hearing parts of that interview on the station throughout the rest of the day. Today, you can listen to that interview on the Odyssey app, on our podcast, the Rewind feature, however it is you want to listen to it. Subscribe to the Payne and Pendergast podcast. Be one of the legions of fans that subscribe to it right now.
Yeah, we do well online for a couple of old guys.
We do. Not too bad. Not too bad.
So, I mean, we do. We're not radio guys. We're live streamers.
That's it.
Everybody knows that.
Everybody.
Who happened to put our live stream out on the radio as well.
That's right. So Cal McNair and Hannah McNair met with the media in West Palm Beach this week at the league meetings. And here's what Cal McNair had to say about the state of the Texans right now, where the team is. They're looking to take another step.
Well, we want to win every game we go out. So that's, we haven't quite done that yet. And only one team has, but so this year compared to the year before coming off the playoff loss, we felt we were a little bit of ways. This year coming off the playoff loss, we felt we were pretty darn close. So I'm sure in the off season the moves are making, and at the draft, and there'll be some more moves here all through training camp right up to the season, and then even in the season. I think we're looking to take another step and excited to see what happens.
The pundits would tell you, the odds makers would tell you, the Texans, in the eyes of the odds makers, are further away now than they were this time a year ago. Yes. Well, maybe. Okay.
Yeah, no, that's good. That's the most objective way to look at it.
Yeah, I guess they. I mean, there. If you look at any Super Bowl odds board, the Texans are still favored significantly to win the AFC South. But I think the rest of the NFL looks at the AFC South like it's a Group of Five conference right now compared to the other divisions. They're anywhere from like 11th through 15th on any given odds board to win the Super Bowl. This time last year, keep in mind, this is the anniversary today of the Stephon Diggs trade. A year ago today, the Texans traded for Stephon Diggs. And that, I think combined with Danielle Hunter signing with the team a couple weeks before that, shot the Texans to the moon on the odds board. Power rankings, odds board, top five everywhere for the Texans. They are not viewed the same now by that group of people as they were a year ago. Cal McNair says they feel they're closer now than they were a year ago. Where are you with where the Texans are right now as to compare to a year ago?
I think if I just were to break it down by talent on the roster, I think they're closer now than they were then. I think that the defense is just, it's a fundamentally good defense. They have to clean some things up to be a genuine, if they clean a couple things up, they could be a genuinely great defense. But I trust them. I think last year there was a lot of enthusiasm about the promise the offense had shown going from 2023 into 2024. I was consistent with this throughout last offseason.
Yep.
I I was not as convinced that the offense was going to be awesome because they hadn't been a good offense the year before. They've been a promising offense. I was excited about the potential for it. But the big question was really whether or not Bobby Slowick was a good offensive coordinator. And he didn't prove that he was last year. So I think talent-wise, the additions they made in 2024 on defense were good ones. And they made sense. I think the addition of Joe Mixon was a good one. But really, the biggest question is Nick Caley a better offensive coordinator than Bobby Slowick? And we just have no way of knowing that. So I think that I feel better and more solid about certain parts of the team, but Nick Caley is as much of an unknown right now as Bobby Slowick was. So I'd put it at a wash as far as whether they are in a better position or not to win a Super Bowl.
Yeah, than they were last year. I think, look, the obviously the people that had them touted that high up this time a year ago were wrong. They were not that team. I think they can be wrong this year, too, and maybe ranking them a little bit too low. To me, it's like, okay, if they're right about the offensive line, and being right about the offensive line doesn't mean that they go from being the 29th best offensive line to the third best offensive line.
Yeah.
Being right about the offensive line and what the tenor was in that room and having an offensive line that plays and feels like they genuinely care snap to snap. There were so many snaps last year where you had guys, few of whom are not in the building anymore, just like you point out, stop during plays, just look like they uninterested in blocking
just
on
stand
screens.
Around, yeah.
Yeah, stand around. If they have guys that are legitimately care and are just as in its totality are average. Like if you can go from 29th to 17th or 16th as an offensive line, then I think you do get back to where this team was maybe viewed at, you know, back in that neighborhood last
year.
Well,
and the whole thing about the whole thing about the offense in total, not just the offensive line, is that it was glaringly obvious on the offensive line. But the thing that was driving me insane more and more as the year went along was it was every position group making bad decisions or at times just looking like they didn't know what they were doing. And those screens, as much as, you know, they were awful at running screens, you got to remember on a lot of those screens, it was the receivers who didn't know who they were supposed to be blocking.
Yes.
At various moments in the run game and the pass game, it was the tight ends who didn't know what they were doing. And when the offensive coordinator gets up week after week saying about how we have to execute, when people in every position group are not executing properly, that's the offensive coordinator. It's so much less about the actual play calling as executing the plays that you call correctly. And that is on the offensive coordinator. It's not, you don't separate play calling from execution and say, nope, the play call is the responsibility of the offensive coordinator and the execution is the responsibility of the players. Ultimately, the offensive coordinator is responsible for all of that, and they didn't know what the hell they were doing in any given week. So if Caley is a competent offensive coordinator, there will be better execution. And I don't care as much about the play calling as I care about the execution.
Yeah.
They're just, you can do it. You can run whichever scheme or philosophy you want. If you run the plays correctly, you got a much better chance than having a brilliant play call that people aren't executing properly.
If you're a sales manager and you got a group of salespeople that by and large are not selling, the sales manager gets fired. you know, and the sales manager in this case is Bobby Slowick. Now, you fire a few of the salespeople as well. Like they, you know, and I guess firing the salespeople would be getting rid of Laramie Tunsil and getting rid of Kenyon Green and cutting Shaq Mason. Just wholesale changes. I feel good. Like they are going to be elite on one side of the football. The floor for this team, I think, is decently high. Like this team, barring C.J. Stroud getting abducted by aliens, I think the floor on this team is pretty high considering you get six games inside the division. It's not a great division. You've got a defense that is talented and isn't too top-heavy. You're pretty good at all three levels of the defense, particularly at edge rusher and in the secondary, so you're going to force a lot of turnovers. That defense and your quarterback are going to go win you 8 or 9 games, even if you're not a very good football team.
Yeah, the defense and their ability to force turnovers, which, you know, that can kind of ebb and flow, but they're... the recovering the fumbles is the trickier one. There's just some random luck involved with that. Yeah. But I think they're going to continue to get a lot of interceptions. Really, defensively, they got to stop letting up so many big plays.
Yes.
They do a lot of really good stuff for 95% of the snaps, but then they let up a huge play and kind of dash it all against the rocks. That's the one huge area of improvement that would turn them into a genuinely elite defense. And I think a lot of that was really a lot of that was youth in the secondary, yeah, as much as it was anything else. So theoretically, that should get better, but sometimes guys don't get smarter as they get older.
How nervous do you think the people are that are organizing the draft party that Nick Caserio is going to trade out of the first round before the draft, or even worse, at the draft? You got everybody there already.
Yeah, I'm guessing they've got a plan for it. They've got like a little. Maybe if they should do something like a giveaway if they do trade out, like a free T-shirt or something. If Caserio trades out.
Trade out insurance. You know, like something to compensate them if they do. Yeah, because that. I mean, if he gets a Godfather, you know, some team wants to trade back into the first round to get Jackson Dart, that kind of thing. Yeah. You know, like a team. You see that sometimes teams getting back into the first round to draft a quarterback. Lamar Jackson was one of those guys. You know, the Baltimore Ravens traded up to 32, so you get that extra fifth-year option on him. He gets a Godfather offer for, like, the 25th pick in the draft, and they trade out, and there's 8,000 people at Discovery Green waiting on the pick.
I'll give him maybe like a gift certificate for free hot dog and a drink or something.
You got to give him something, right? Don't you got to give him like a something at the team store or something like that.
I don't want to say they got to do it. I don't want to get my idea. I don't want to get my hands in their business or anything. That's true. But it might be a nice gesture.
It'd be a nice gesture. Good way to put it. Yeah. I think about that a lot.
Some kind of limited apparel or something.
Yeah, something. Or a t-shirt that says, "I was there when Nick screwed the draft party." You know, something.
So there's somebody over at NRG Stadium right this moment being like, "You sons of bitches."
No, hey, you got to plan for these things, all right? I'm guessing they are.
Yeah, I'm just helping. That's just what I would do personally.
Yeah.
You do.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
Street Easy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House of the Home Theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, Street Easy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do what you want.
All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610, about an hour away from the fellas of the drive getting going. And I'm sure they're probably already on their way to the boot.
Oh, they're probably already a couple in.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't doubt it. Go out and say what's up to the fellas. Get you some crawdads.
Mm-hmm.
Some crawfish, crayfish, whatever you want to call
them. I say crawdads too, and some people judge me for that.
It's just fun.
Yeah.
It sounds quaint and folksy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's how I grew up calling them crawdads.
Oh, I didn't grow up calling them crawdads. I just like saying crawdads.
Okay.
I mean, like, why would you not?
Yeah.
If you have an objection to me saying crawdads, please let me know. Mm-hmm. I like hearing from the people. 713-572-4610. In addition, in fact, you can't tell me why you don't like me saying crawdads if you don't tell me the last time you raced, because that has been making me smile.
Mm-hmm.
To be fair, though, I'm not enjoying the fact that so many of you have been getting hurt. It's just I appreciate
you kind of are.
All right, maybe a little. I do have a little bit of a 4 years ago. Was the last time
you got confirmation?
Got confirmation 4 years ago, which means I was 29 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So, hey, maybe that I wasn't as old as I thought I was. I think I could still pull it off. I could still pull it off right now. I probably could. All right, a legend, three legends in the game got together for a little podcast. It's the Goat Talk Podcast. Appreciation of the Texans media for putting it together, and J.J. Watt was one of those three legends, along with Jonathan Joseph and Andre Johnson. And they got together for this podcast. I found it really, really interesting. So I wanted to circle back to it. And I mean, it's a really good listen. It's an hour long, and there's some various things that are really fun, including, and this is a cut two here, Byron. This is the first time that JJ, young JJ, went out with Andre Johnson. So before I have Byron play this, apparently, you know, in the locker room when Andre, mm-hmm. I mean, he's a personable guy. However, like, he also did not talk a lot. I know that we're not surprised by that.
Deep voice, low tone, man a few words, but you better be listening to him.
Right.
You better be listening
and
to
him. And that's very much the way that people felt. So, like, yeah. For JJ, as he's telling this story, this is where it starts. It starts with the feeling that, hey, man, Andre Johnson, when he talks, you listen. And especially when he invites you to go somewhere, you definitely say yes.
It was my rookie year. Andre was like, let's go out. I literally was like, you talking to me? Like, I look at him. And he was like, yeah. So it was just me and Andre. And I'm literally like sweating. I'm like, holy shit. Like, I'm out with Andre. He's like, all right, we're going to go to Washington. I pull up on Washington. Like, hey, we go to the door. The doorman's like, I'm sorry, sir. You can't come in.
Because of my shoes.
Because of his shoes. They were like all white. And I was like, what? And he was like, no. He's like, you can't come in, man. And I go, that's Andre Johnson. Like, I was like, that's Andre Johnson. He's like, I don't care. And all of a sudden, this manager came like sprinting out of the back. And he's like, no, they're good. They're good. I was like, yeah. Psychopath, like, we're in Houston, Texas, and you're gonna tell Andre Johnson he can't come in? He could be wearing flip-flops if he wants.
I'm amazed that there was anybody in Houston at any given point that did not like readily know Andre Johnson, especially like if you in that type of industry, right? If you are,
I disagree.
On it, really,
you give a guy a yellow windbreaker, all of a sudden they think they are it. It's their way or the highway. I say yellow windbreaker because that's what they use at stadiums a lot. But you give that guy, a doorman, that authority, he's like, I don't care who you are, Andre, can I have an autograph? But you can't come in, you know? It happens all the time.
How long do you think it would happen before JJ got that level of treatment? Because obviously this is early JJ before we even get to that space.
Yeah, probably 1 year. It was after that, you know, after he became a superstar in that Cincinnati playoff game, probably everything changed.
Yeah. So yeah. I found that to be a funny
one thing about Andre,
anecdote.
Though. Yeah. You know, being around the team a little bit and knowing Andre a little bit, as low key as he is and just a good, solid person, he loves to go out with his teammates.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's just his way of saying, like, he went out a lot. Now, he wasn't a wild man. He just liked to go, you know, hang out with his guys.
Right. I think if memory serves, like, that's kind of in part how the Courtland Finnegan beef came about.
Absolutely it is. That's right.
Him and his people being out, mm-hmm. and then just a level of disrespect.
Hey, that's Courtland Finnegan, man.
Yeah, okay. And then eventually he had to
say, I'm going to beat his ass.
That's right. Which, again, I think during the course of this podcast, he also reiterated he has to answer about that literally every day of his life. But thankfully, it's a good thing. Yeah. Thankfully, it is indeed a good thing. All right. How about this? This is, and we know this, J.J. Watt, it was announced, what was that, a few weeks ago, mm-hmm. that he is now going to move from a studio role for CBS into the booth. He will be an analyst on, I think it's basically the B team for CBS Sports. He's working with Ian Eagle as an analyst now in this upcoming season. And I found this to be interesting because, I mean, look, they were just kind of talking about life and talking about where he is. And Andre asked J.J., how he enjoys working in TV. And I thought there was something that JJ offered up willingly that I think is going to make him an incredible, incredible broadcaster.
Good. Like, I love still being around ball. I love being able to talk football. Like, it would be very weird if I didn't have some tie to the game because I love watching it, talking about it, breaking it down. At the same time, I have a very difficult time criticizing guys because, like, I was on the field. Like, I know. Like, you got a guy who's breaking down film and he's drawing up the plays and you're like, that's not my assignment. That's not my job. And you just threw all this blame on me on national TV. So I never want to be that guy. So I'm always very careful from that standpoint. But it has been really, really fun still being a part of the game.
So what part of that made you think he'd be really, really good? Because I think that might be when we're like, oh, well.
Well, I think that what it.
Because Tom Brady got criticized for not really criticizing people. Other people have done that as
sure.
well.
Sure. And I don't think that it's necessarily that he won't criticize. But I think I took that to mean he's going to be very careful and very measured in his criticism. And I think that just it's going to point to the way that he's going to be very methodical and care analytical. Very deeply about his work. And yeah. maybe not even that he's just going to stay to the analytics, but that he's going to be, like, he's thinking about it deeply in that way.
Yeah, right? No, I don't mean analytical. I mean, like, analytical of what's happening. Yes. Yeah.
No, I took that to mean, oh, he's gonna hit you with EPA
no,
all the time.
No, God,
the broadcast.
No. That's your job.
That's right. but, no, I guess, now that you say that, I can hear how maybe that operates in the other way where you're like, okay, but you're not.
Yeah, you're paid.
You're
to
not
be
analyzing this, right?
Opinionated, you know.
But that's the thing that I feel about. Like, I don't think JJ has ever not been opinionated. I think though, like the caution and care that he's going to give and take his job with, I think matters. And I think that also speaks to the reason I feel about that is JJ is a hard worker, man. Like JJ's never not been a worker, so I don't believe him to like not come to the job with that level of work. Yeah. I just appreciate that. With that work, he's also going to bring like that compassion that we've seen him have. Like I still remember, and this is when he ended up in Arizona. I think it was Hard Knocks, where, and I can't remember who the player was on the practice field, but somebody had dropped the pass, and he was really beating himself up on the sideline.
I think it was Moore.
Was it Rondale Moore?
Yeah,
I believe that sounds about right. Rondale Moore was beating himself up, and he was like, "Did it hit your hands? Ah, yeah, you're supposed to catch it." Of his hands, and it was like basically trying to lighten it up with a joke. He's like, "No, man, you dropped it, and then we're gonna go back out here,
yeah,
and catch the next one. Like, just make that the opportunity to catch the next one. Like, that's what JJ's always brought is that level of like care and capacity."
It'll be interesting to watch because remember Sean Payton refused to say anything remotely opinionated because he knew he was gonna come back and coach, you know,
right.
And he didn't want to criticize players individually. It'll be interesting to watch. I think JJ is gonna be, as you mentioned, prepared enough and know the job enough to bring fair opinion and sometimes criticism, but at the same time you want to watch, make sure he's not being like too protective, you know?
For sure.
Yeah.
How about this as we continue with JJ's appearance on the Goat Talk podcast with Jonathan Joseph and Andre Johnson. This is Seven here. They asked it flat out, what was the biggest thrill of you being a Texan?
Biggest thrill as a Texan,
in my opinion, is by far that first playoff run that we had. And then obviously the second year backing it up and trying to go again. But winning our first ever playoff game for an organization, everything that came with it, nothing better. Like, those memories are something that I will cherish for the rest of my life.
Is there anything else that could have replaced that answer for you, for JJ?
I don't think so. That's still, you know, I put that on my list. You know, whenever I talk about, you know, greatest Texans moments, et cetera, that was an unbelievable scene. It was an unbelievable moment that he had.
The interception?
Yeah. And the pick six. It's to this day the loudest I've ever heard NRG. That's number one. It's got to be. As much as he did after that. He had 21, you know, sack seasons.
Right.
But I still think that's it. Yeah.
Right. And I think that you're right. And I think that that's what ultimately, like, the goal is to get back to, right?
Mm-hmm.
To have that type of energy again, and hopefully you get to that space. But you mentioned like just some of the heights that he reached, and I thought this was I really enjoyed that they got into this aspect of it because Andre was, you know, kind of talking to JJ about how wild it is that, you know, that family produced three professional football players and two of them at an incredibly high level, and so, you know, JJ was kind of talking about that, and I love this little jab that happens in here.
How lucky are we that we get to have these conversations at the highest level of the game that nobody else ever gets to have? Like, it's, to us, it's the coolest thing in the world that my brother calls me and asks about an NFL pass rush move because we both got to do it at this level. It's really, really cool, man. And I've always said it, but I truthfully hope he breaks every single record I've ever had, and I think he probably will. But if we're talking about best single year ever,
I knew that was correct.
Best single year ever.
But he's going to have the better career. He's going to have the better career, but there's a 4-year stretch where he couldn't touch it.
Facts.
Facts. There was laughs in here, but it's because it's objectively.
That ain't going to happen.
I can't see it. I can't see it happening.
That ain't going to happen.
All right, so I'm going to do something that's blasphemous.
Derek?
I was going Will.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, what about Derek?
Oh, well, no. I'm not one of those people that's going to bleep on Derek.
He said my brother, singular.
Well, yeah, but I mean, we were talking about the dudes that are still playing and the dudes that played at that very high level. Derek got him some NFL money. Ain't no shame.
No bit.
In his game,
yeah.
But like Will Anderson Jr., when it comes to, like, because I thought about this, I'm like, TJ has gotten so far in his career and he's been incredible. He's, you know, defensive player of the year caliber player. But I think he's far enough along that, yeah, I don't know that you can see him touching J.J. Watt. And, of course, touching J.J. Watt's career, the heights of the career, that's not an easy task for any individual. But you've got Will Anderson Jr. here, and he has already proved himself to be an incredible caliber player. We've talked about him being, you know, on the precipice of being in those Defensive Player of the Year conversations. Can you see a, I guess, like a pseudo-brother in a way, right? Like a brother in Texans brotherhood. Maybe reaching those heights.
That's a big ask. You know, you look at JJ.
I know, I'm setting him up to fail here. I apologize.
Well, no, not to fail. He's going to be an incredible player. He is an incredible player. But you got to keep this in mind. JJ's first 20-sack season was his second year.
That's right.
I mean, it was like he was 23 years old and had 20 and a half sacks. So that's, I mean, that. Will Anderson's already past that. You know, he's going into his third season.
Yeah.
You know, so that's a big, big, big ask. And then just, you know, that also, you know, Will Anderson has Danielle Hunter on the other end. And, you know, there's some other little factors as well.
That was one of the things that was cool to listen. I don't have a specific cut of it, but J.J. Watt, like, showing the love. Because, of course, you have two guys that were, you know, two of these guys were in that same defense room. And then, obviously, Andre loomed large enough on that team. Where they were talking about a lot of the various players on that team that he felt like added to him. I mean, I specifically remember Brady Jane, right? Like the portions that he added just in that final season of his career with JJ and the ways in which he still to this day is grateful to Brady. So, like, you know, there's always it's always a village of people that help somebody get to that spot. So I found that to be really fun as well. All right, let me get to this. This is can you give me eight here? And this is actually more Andre than JJ. This is JJ asking Andre about something that I think we all kind of think about Andre Johnson, a Hall of Famer, rightfully so, the first one to go in for the Texans. But JJ Watt asked him if he ever wondered what his career would look like if he had gone to an established team rather than a franchise that was
expansion
is what I was looking for.
You know, to be honest, JJ, I never thought about it. Like, I always tell people it was my first Pro Bowl, and I remember it. So, you know, when they call the teams up to take the pictures, and I was the only guy there from the Texans. And when they said the Houston Texans, the guy was like, "Who the hell is here from the Texans?" And I was like, "What?" Like, you know, like it was almost like it was disrespect, you know, and I'm not going to lie, bro. Like, that's something that fueled me. Like, I took that disrespect and I was just like, you know what? Like, when you think about the Texans, you're going to think about me, you know, and that was always like my attitude. That was the way I approached it. For me to go somewhere that was already established, like I don't think I might have won a you know, experience a little bit more success. But I think the way that this happened and the relationships I was able to build just with the city and the fans, I wouldn't change it for nothing more.
Yeah, I believe every single word that he said because we know what Andre is, you know, the kind of class that he shows and the career he had, et cetera. I do think, and you know, before the draft, he was probably one of those people too. Like, oh, you know, of all the teams I could go to, I don't know about the Houston Texans. I mean, and it made sense. It's not critical. I mean, they were in their second year of existence when they drafted J.J. Watt. But once he's here, like everybody in Houston, like once you get to Houston, it's like, oh, it gets in your blood, you know? And I think that's the case with him.
Yeah. So a really fun podcast. I mean, it's worth the listen if you just love reminiscing and getting into the minds of those goats, I guess, in a way, when it comes to goat talk. With J.J. Watt, Andre Johnson, J.J.O. That was a really cool listen. All right. You're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Payne and Pendergast had one of many conversations with general manager of this Houston Texans football team, Nick Caserio. We talked about some of it yesterday, and obviously you'll hear about it a lot. We're 3 weeks out from the draft, and we're talking about free agency. Like, all of these things are pertinent. You had some takeaways, some more takeaways and things that you think that it's fair to kind of draw some conclusions on. So let us know if you agree with these conclusions that we'll draw. And we'll start here. And this is a cut to Byron. This is Nick Caserio on Payne and Pendergast And Sean asked a pretty good question about, I hate, wait, let me press pause.
He was all right.
Let me press pause, because that came out very, very wrong.
It was all right.
That was not meant to be a judgment of any sorts, and it sounded very judgmental. Sean is very good at this. Seth is very good at this. I hope to be as good as them someday when I grow up. But I thought Sean asked a good question when he asked, were there maybe times last year where D'Amico and offensive line coach Chris Strasser and Bobby Slowick and a player just kind of weren't necessarily on the same page?
Yeah, I'm not going to speak for D'Amico, but I mean, you know, there's always a lot of communication that takes place. It's never one particular thing. So in the end, going back to when we made the decision, when D'Amico made the decision that he did to move on from Bobby, certainly wasn't an easy decision. So I'd say the fact that Nick and Cole have some level of experience together, I mean, it always helps when any time that you have an opportunity to work with one another. Again, like, we've won 20 games over the last 2 years. So like, a lot of things that we were doing, you know, couldn't have been all that bad. So, but you know, we're just trying to figure out like, all right, what's the best thing for the Texans? What do we think we got to do moving forward? I think we'll work through it here. We'll try to have a good off season, you know, try to get the players, let's say, in good condition. And then once we get to training camp, obviously we're going to have more information. We're going to have a better idea of where we are. And the whole goal is to just make sure that we're as prepared as we possibly can be for whoever the opponent is week one.
All right. So this is read between the lines, make your own conclusions. And mine might be different from yours,
okay,
or Byron's,
all right,
or any of our listeners. But personally, I think it's pretty obvious. You know, obviously, I'm not going to speak for D'Amico. That's fair. But as he's listening to talking about that question, you know, was there a disconnect? You know, we can draw the conclusion. Clearly, there was something. You know, because that was one of D'Amico's best friends in the business.
Sure.
And he had to let him go. They kept one of the offensive line coaches, who, as he said there, you got to read between the lines. That's what we're in the business of, and sometimes, unfortunately, in this business. You know, he mentioned, well, he's, you know, he and Nick Caley have a relationship, you know, and it's never one thing. Those are the two things from Nick's answer that really stood out to me. It's never one thing, and the question was about, was there a disconnect, lack of communication, whatever it may be. I think that's a yes. To me, reading between the lines, that's a yes. It's never one thing. He's right. But it's sort of an artful dodge there, you know, from the question itself. And that's what Nick Caserio, you know, it does and should do. But if we're listening to this, it's like, okay, yes, all those things that we're sort of postulating and thinking about and wondering about had to have been a factor.
I mean, yeah. And I think that's probably better answered by going back to, you know, D'Amico Ryan speaking at various points,
mm-hmm,
throughout this week, he frequently using kind of the messaging of one voice.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Where, like, I think, and you can make the, you know, kind of potential for multiple voices, so to say, in different levels. Like, maybe it's coach and coordinator, maybe it's coordinator and, you know, assistant coach, like whatever it is. But clearly, There was a lack of synergy in objective or in the ways to get to the objective, mm-hmm, somewhere within the process, because in some ways, like, the new messaging feels like it is answering,
yes,
to that previous problem that existed. And so it does feel like that was a previous problem. And I do want to ask you, do you think that that's encouraging, right? Because obviously it's not encouraging that you had the problems. It's very bad that you had these particular issues largely derail. Or I guess, man, I shouldn't say derail. You won 10 games. You won your division. You won a playoff game. But I mean,
we know what we saw.
Yeah, it hampered the ultimate aptitude that you were able to reach because, mm-hmm, of this portion of your team. Do you think that's encouraging at all? That it seems like if he's leaning on yes, there, or if we're kind of reading between the lines and seeing yes, there was some level of issue there, that they're working so hard and they're speaking so much and they're focusing so much on the idea of having that unison and that unity and that one singular voice going in.
I think that's the focus. I think that's the goal. That's the focus. Again, he just alluded to it. These guys have worked together. It's never one thing, but let's talk about, you know, the way they're going to move forward with this. And I think it's fair. You know, it's not a criticism because, frankly, I think all of us would have done the same thing. That wasn't working. There wasn't a communication.
No.
The offensive line coach and the coordinator clearly had different ideas of how they should be approaching these things. And, oh, by the way, we saw it on the field. You know, we talked about it at 10 a.m. about 2 hours ago now. You know, what they did to Dalton Schultz was frankly unfair. We can criticize Dalton Schultz and his blocking and everything else, but it's unfair.
Or his face.
Sounds
like a
his
joke.
His headband.
Well, I wasn't going there. I wasn't just saying we're bullying him. That sounds like a joke, but I do mean it. Like, I feel like sometimes we got upset at Dalton Schultz because in his face or in his demeanor.
You see the frustration.
And I think that frustration sometimes read as, he don't want to try. Mm-hmm. And I do wonder if that is just a lack of belief in what's being brought to the table, right? Because even if you're trying, I think we all know in our lives that if you don't really believe what you're doing, it makes it tougher to get there. I really do hope that a level of unity, a level of synergy helps bring a level of belief in what these guys are doing. And this is where I can maybe get on track with, I guess, the hopium, for lack of a better term. And I try not to say that judgmentally, that a lot of people have with the offensive line, that, okay, at least if there is a game plan that, one, obviously is just going to be better than the circumstances that these guys were left out with last year, but then two, these guys can believe in, is capable of actually getting the job done, then that can probably raise the level in the performance.
And I think that's what they're doing. It was unfair. We can criticize him, but it was unfair to have a pass-catching tight end be on the edge one-on-one with an elite or even very good NFL defensive rush end. So clearly, I think the answer, the reading between the lines here is, there was a disconnect. Yeah, the communication was bad. And they feel much better about the relationship and what Cole Popovich is going to bring, in terms of implementing Nick Caley's offer.
All right, Mr. Between the Lines reader, what do you feel here? When Nick Caserio, on with Payne and Pendergast yesterday, was asked about the four picks in the top 89, which is, 25, the first round, 25, second round, 58. I think I traded a 59 yesterday when I was messing with my mock draft simulator. Neither here nor there. Mm-hmm. And then you have a couple in the 80s in round three. You have all of those picks. Nick, in the 2025 draft, moving up, moving back, what's it looking like?
Yeah, there's always opportunities top to bottom. So our grading system may be a little bit different than some other grading system, but I think our job between now and the end of April is to understand and know as much about each player as possible, understand what we have. I would say the only thing that we quote unquote need to do is draft good football players with the right mindset and the right mentality, regardless of the position that we play. So that's where our focus is. That's how we've approached it here the last 4 years. That's how we've approached it the last 2 years, specifically with D'Amico and I. And that's not going to change this year. So we're not going to all of a sudden do something different this year than we've done previous years. So no position is going to be off limits. Draft good football players, look at the grade, follow our board, follow our process, and just get them in the building however we see fit.
All right, I want to clear something up. I set that up incorrectly. That was actually a question about, Are you still doing like the draft evaluation of guys outside of kind of positions of need further than that, especially with the picks that you have and the needs that you might kind of more be drafting towards?
And I think that set up perfectly. And I said it before Robinson was brought in or any of, Trent Brown or any of these guys. You know, one thing that Nick Caserio hates, every general manager hates it, but it seems like Nick Caserio really, really wants to be in a position where he's a little unpredictable. And as much as you and I might say, offensive lineman, maybe a receiver, I think it's really unpredictable, and I think that's the position that he likes to be in. And that's what he said. I believe he said no position is off limits. It might sound a little crazy for you and me, but really no position is off limits. Hell, we talked about tight end earlier, and at this point it might sound crazy for you and me. But if there's something crazy that happens in the draft, he's in a position to move up or move down and be a little unpredictable.
Yeah, I mean, that's always the objective. I might be a little more conservative in that way. Anytime I hear move up, I get a little shaky.
Sure.
Because that is, you're really betting on, I perfectly identified this. And I mean, if you're moving up for like a Tyler Warren, I get why you would feel that confidence. He has looked like a monster in his time in college. And then obviously all through this particular offseason as you get ready for the draft. And that brings me back to the text line, the Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line, specifically the 8-2 asks, would you guys give up an extra first round pick next year? So next year's first round pick in order to move up and get Tyler Warren. This person would. They go further to say that, he looks like J.J. Watt if J.J. Watt had stayed at tight end. How do you feel about that? Because, again, you talk about tight end, and that level of versatility and being able to draft anything. Would you take that level of being able to draft everything and then give advanced additional capital in order to move up to get a player like that?
That is a lot, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't feel comfortable.
I don't either.
And I acknowledge I'm being a scaredy cat. That's fair, but I don't feel comfortable with that. Even understanding Tyler Warren is really good. He feels like he'd be the type of player that you know, splits the difference of what we were talking about earlier when it comes to tight end.
Mm-hmm.
You want somebody who's going to impact the passing game, especially better than what Dalton Schultz did last year, which, of course, you can blame on various different things besides just Dalton himself. But then also, you would very much like somebody who can contribute to the run game, especially in a way that Nick Caley, even if we don't know exactly what he wants to run, we know he likes big formations.
Mm-hmm.
We know that he likes those. I know that he's spoken about being a more of a game plan offense and kind of wanting to hit various things. So maybe he doesn't specifically do that, but giving him the versatility and the option of having your tight end in line in those types of things, that'd be cool. I just don't know if I prioritize that over solidifying an offensive line that is the foundation of all these things, or giving yourself another wide receiver, or making your defense even better in attacking quarterbacks on the opposing side.
Yeah, that would be a no for me.
Okay. All right.
But you're
know also what? A scaredy cat. Welcome.
I am a scaredy cat when it comes to a top 10 pick. To move from 25 into top 10, 11, whatever it may be, for Tyler Warren, that's a big amount of equity.
What if it's not like up beyond 14 to get that? And what if it's like,
well, then that's what I'm talking about. Like Nick Casario's in a perfect position.
Okay.
You know, this is what he wanted. He didn't want to be predictable. Oh, they're drafting a guard. Oh, they're drafting a tackle. And now you plausibly believe that there are some options there, you know? So, I would be a little more warm to the idea, you know, of 15, 16, whatever it may be.
The 337 said, I can see them drafting a quarterback. I actually can too, but it feels like that.
Not there.
No. Ooh, absolutely. That would make me mad on multiple fronts.
Yes, it would.
You know my stance on this quarterback class, with all due respect to the dudes in it, not saying that they can't become something great, but I don't like the odds that I'd be gambling on using that. And then two, I mean, you're set at quarterback. This feels like one of those, maybe you take a day three flyer on a guy. I know that in their various visits, whether it's top 30 or local days or what have you, they've talked to Quinn Ewers.
Yeah.
And so I do wonder if they do something like that in one of the later rounds. Real quick before we go here, I want to circle back around to this. Nick Casario was asked, how do you feel out a player potentially making trade in division, like Christian Kirk, when you acquired him for like that seventh round pick?
Yeah, I would say you never make it personal. I would say that whole notion, Seth, of, okay, if you trade in a division, look, it's some of it is a little bit of a myth. So, I mean, you're either going to do business with people or you're not. And you can't be afraid of what the repercussions or what the fan base might think. Oh, you can't do that because it's going to have a negative effect. Everybody just has to run their team how they see fit and just make the decisions that they feel are in their best interest. We're not opposed to doing anything that we feel is going to help the Houston Texans, because that's ultimately the fiduciary responsibility that we have, that I have to D'Amico and to the McNair family, is to do what I think is in the best interest of the Houston Texans, not what's in the best interest of me personally. So we'll work with anybody. Like, you're never going to, this list of players are off limit, or list of agents or list of teams. Quite frankly, I think that's pretty parochial and narrow-minded to do business that way. So as long as we're in a position, you know, that we're in, that I'm in, then, you know, we'll be open-minded and do business and do what's best for what's best for the Texans first and foremost.
And that one stood out to me just because I wanted to give him a figurative fist bump. This is one of the things I've stood on for a long time. Nick, if you're listening, consider yourself fist bumped, because I've always said this. Don't play scared. You've heard me say it. I've said it for years. Don't play scared. You know, what are you doing? You either have confidence in what you're doing or you're scared. And a lot of general managers don't do this. A lot of general managers don't like to deal with teams in their division. Now, the Deshaun Watson thing, in which it was very obvious he wasn't going to deal with anybody in the division, that's totally different. Franchise quarterback at his powers back then, before we all knew how much he would fall. I get that. If it's a quarterback. But if you're saying, division, I don't want to, you're basically scared that you're going to look bad. You know, you don't want to look bad.
That's always the concern, right?
And I don't like general managers that are worried about looking bad.
Right, and I think that if you talk about anybody who's not concerned about appearances, it is Nick Casario. And I appreciate that, because that feels like an unnecessary hindrance to put on the way that you do your operation. And I think that that's the thing that I ultimately take away is, oh, yeah, my man's all business. He's like, let's make sure that we can get this result. Let's not worry about some of the other things that would unnecessarily make my job harder here. All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Again, salute to Payne and Pendergast. Another fantastic sit down with Nick Casario.
That's right, baby. The Drive is live, and we are live on the road. We are at the Boot here in the Heights. And, Tyler, this is your kind of spot, man.
Y'all in my spot, man, my area.
I'm telling you, man, I almost had to park in your spot. Hold on.
Just because you pay the light bill down the street don't mean you get to claim. You don't get to claim all the damn
heights. I think I would push right back on that and say that's a very damn good reason I should be able to claim that, sir.
I'm looking at it.
Hey, their parking lot does butt up next to the Boot, so you ought to know. You ought to put your truck on the autopilot and be able to get right here.
I was struggling to find parking at one point. I thought about just writing a sign on my car saying, Tyler Milner's friend.
So the ticket police won't get you?
They say, well, hell, we ain't going to tow him. He knows
that. Oh, that's Milner. Our guy. That's our guy there.
No, man, it's a good time. I'll get on down here, and we just talked to the guy who runs the place. He said March was their best month ever because them bugs are flowing, and I'm looking at it. There's a young lady sitting right here in front of me. She just tapped out on the bugs, and then I saw her tap out, Clint. And then she said, the hell with it. And I saw her go ahead and take two more down. But it is every. But she didn't do that.
That was a guess.
Maybe capable, but did not do that. But there are plenty. Every table I'm seeing has bugs all over the place.
Yes.
Bugs, and you got beers, and you got it all, man. It's going to be a good time out here.
Buckets of beer and boiled bugs. I don't know what else you could possibly want. And overcast. It is a little windy out, so there's a breeze for you. Some of the Sterner clan is here, and it's going. We're in for a good time. We're in for a good time. Big weekend.
Mama Hog out there.
No, Granny didn't make it. I don't know. Oh. Speaking of that, she's going to hear this and be madder than hell.
She is. She
loves her bugs. Find you a few more excuses. Mm.
Like you.
No,
know,
she's working. She's working, so I'm safe.
I don't call myself obviously like you, or you as well, Tyler, a crawfish connoisseur like you are.
Okay. You're new to it, yeah.
But I do know food, and one of the tells to a spot that's real good is when you just got people who come solo. When you got people who just come by themselves and they got their earbuds in, they're listening to a book or a podcast. I see you didn't just came. She didn't just came up here all by herself. She didn't just got her damn nails done, and she said, "I am getting in. I don't care."
That's
alone.
Beautiful. That's
but
beautiful.
That's when you know it's good. So bring your ass on down here. And hang out with us, get some bugs, get some beer, and have a good time with the Drive.
Yeah, we are at the Boot in the Heights.
That's
come
right.
on out, you can't miss it. Large outdoor area, small little watering hole bar. There is an AC room behind me if anybody's interested. So don't let the temp scare you away already. Now come on through and hang out. The food's tremendous, the service is tremendous. As Ron said. Billy runs a place, owns a place, just came through and spoke to us. Friendly people, friendly staff. Come on through, man. The bugs are hot. The beer's cold. Sterling Milner just walked in acting just like his older brother. Just like his older brother. So come on through.
He's about to get trashed, dude.
Make me proud, son. Make me proud.
Make me proud, son. All right. Speaking of that, I'm really nervous, but I feel like to do justice to the audience, I have to ask this question. Is this a benchmark or is this just not another day? Tyler, do we have a guest the DoorDash tonight, or did you go ahead and take it on in on a Thursday night? I'm a little nervous because we've done it 2-3 times this week. Are we having a guest the DoorDash, or did you just slow down?
We last won't
night?
Be having a daily
Thank God.
Benchmark.
Thank
yeah,
God.
No daily benchmark. I was responsible last night. I actually did a lot of good work up here at the station. Got home, went to bed a decent hour. Had some spaghetti, homemade.
Hey, it was spaghetti. Put a little carbs on it.
Yeah,
noodle. What is wrong with you? Why are you looking down? He came. He did what you
I
wanted.
I can't do nothing right in Clint's
he
eyes, can. Man.
He
Come
did
on.
What you wanted. You're shaking your head, and you hit me with a this
I mean,
guy.
I mean, look. Let's not go from one extreme to the other. We go from 2:00 in the morning, door dashing, to all of a sudden we worked late and got a bunch of work done and ate a homemade meal with the wife. Let's meet in the middle somewhere.
What is wrong?
I mean, come on, man. Let's meet in the middle somewhere, man. Come on.
Come on. Yeah, dude, you can't do
all
that.
All right, next man. Time I'll have a shot with the spaghetti.
No.
That is great. As well you should, T. As well you should. Well
those played. Of you, those of you on the Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line, 713-572-4610.
I growl and bark.
YouTube and Twitch as well. It's Clint being a little rough on Tyler right now.
Oh, I'm always rough on Tyler. Hell yes. Tyler needs a little more rough in his life.
It's a Baytown way.
Clearly,
Tyler's a lot like my 3-year old. They need a little rough in their life.
Clint, man.
I don't mean he's my 3-year old. I just mean in general.
Just a lot like
the approach, right? Like you just need a little more rough in your life.
Yo, I can hear you, bro. I'm right here. I can hear you. All right.
Hey, your brother's he's shaking his head, nodding like, yeah, you're right.
Need a little rough. He
said you're right. He said
Shut
you
up,
got away
Sterling.
With everything, and he
Shut
got
up.
His ass whooped all the time at home. I don't know. I mean, sounds like you need to.
Oh, hell no.
I don't know.
Listen, I'm just here. I'm here to support you most of the time, Tyler. So I'm just.
I appreciate that, bro. I really
here
do.
To support you most of the time.
Means
all
a
right.
lot.
As we get going here on a Friday, a lot to get to. We got the Final Four in San Antonio. U of H is there. I know a lot of people are excited there. I've already heard from a lot of people that are heading down there. Enjoy yourself. We'll get into that because Houston's got a tall task, and I think that is the game of the night. Houston and Duke, we'll get into some of that as well. And the Rockets got a big one tonight against the best team in the NBA, OKC. We'll dive into that. But, Clint, there has been, and I want to start with the Texans here, because there's been a phrase that we have been hearing. So the owners' meetings have started, and now we've started to hear from D'Amico. We've started to hear from Nick Caserio, all right, especially this is the first time we're hearing from them post these moves they made in free agency, post the ads they made. And there is one particular phrase, right, and I always say this, man, sports can get like politician plans where they just have talking points and you just hear them, right? Swarm is one.
Oh, you beat me to it. I was about to say swarm.
Swarm is one. Like all of that, like, what is he, no energy vampires, all of that. One we're starting to hear now, Clint, one voice.
Yeah.
One voice. We're hearing it from D'Amico. We're hearing it from Nick. Hannah was probably ready to say it. Still haven't been on our show, but still was ready to say it. One voice. Where do you think that's coming from? What do you think that represents now?
I think that the interesting part here is a question I don't have the answer to, right? But is that something that they looked up and just said, hey, man, we got to become more unified and more one voice and more streamlined, or is this a reaction to what was going on in the building last year?
You don't think this is a coincidence, right?
No, I don't.
That we're hearing that a lot.
No, I think when you fire your offensive line coach, when you fire your offensive coordinator, and typically when you've got guys that their jobs are on the line, you've got other guys that could possibly want their job, you got a lot of banter, if you will, a lot of chirping behind the scenes. And so, again, the question is this a result of, hey, man, there was a problem last year of too many Chiefs in a room, you know, not enough Indians, too many Chiefs kind of deal. And or is this just something that Nick and D'Amico said, hey, look, we've got to get better in this department? I think it was a problem last year, right? I think when you've got an offensive coordinator that don't want to budge, you got several offensive coordinator candidates underneath him. And not pointing any fingers, but you got Bill Lazor, you got Gerard Johnson, you got O-line coach that's on his way out and then has an assistant coming in kind of deal. Seems like there was probably multiple voices and in a bad way, in a really bad way. So either way it goes, I like it. I think it's very important. I think it's imperative to winning. But I think it's a response to something that negative in the building.
Yeah, I don't think it's a coincidence either. I think that they feel like they need to get to that space. They need to get to the on the same page. I think that has probably been a somewhere in, and they won 10 games. Like Nick said, we got to be doing something right. We won 20 games in the last 2 years. They won 10 games. But still, there was something off with the connection there.
Yeah.
Right? There was – and when I hear one voice, like, if you were to tell me, hey – and we've heard reports. We've heard toxic reports, even though D'Amico downplayed that, just denied that was actually happening in the O-line room. But we've heard those things and heard things reported to where – Like there were people on different pages, and not just different pages. It would almost look like maybe at some points that there were just people saying, "All right, I'm gonna go on my page." I'm gonna go on my page. I don't even care what the page is that we've agreed to do. I'm still gonna go on my page. And you're hearing that now, one voice. And I'm not saying this is the truth, but you could get to a point, Clint, where you say, well, maybe they let a couple of people with these multiple voices on out the building. If you start seeing some of the changes, maybe they let some of these people who had multiple voices out the building.
It seems like the one that should have been the only voice is the one that got kicked out of the building. But the reality of it is I think there's too many dots to connect to think that this is just, hey, man, we need to be better. There's too many dots to connect that you had all of these things going on to where you had to somewhat clean house on the offensive side of the football to get some of the noise out of the room to make sure that you can become, that one voice. And so, again, I commend D'Amico and Nick for making this happen, and I love the one voice approach to everything because you absolutely need it. And I love the fact that it took them 2 years under Bobby Slowick and whatever happened last year to figure this thing out. But it is curious to know, like, they are outwardly talking about one voice consistently. And if you really think about what they're saying, I think it's pretty indicative of what really was going on last year.
And look, man, I know everybody feels how they feel. Like, I'm not entirely into everything that they have done thus far and how they have decided to go about things in the offseason. And we'll see if this works. Hey, one down, huh?
That cold beer is going down, y'all.
Yeah, we'll see how it works. But, Clint, I ain't mad at him for trying to get to this space.
Not one bit.
Love it. You don't want to have that, and you know better than anybody. I think you have lived in spaces, probably at Arkansas, where you guys were more in the one voice and everybody's on the same page. And then you probably lived it the other way where everybody had different agendas. And nip that in the bud in year two. Yeah, you won 20 games. So I got no problem with the thought of getting to this point.
Yeah. No, you're right. I've been in both places, and it's impossible to win when you got so many Chiefs, and everybody, and they're undermining each other. You know what I mean? If you've got three quality, Chiefs that are locked arm and they're working hand in hand, that's a powerful being.
Or maybe even there's some disagreement, but we come to the party and the understanding at the end of like, all right, this is the route we're going to go. We talk it out, not just like, all right, man, cool.
Let's be honest, man. I mean, it's we've heard stories. I mean, I don't have a problem talking about it. I mean, I've heard stories of, the messaging to CJ not being, different than maybe what the offensive coordinator wanted. The messaging to D'Amico maybe undermining the offensive coordinator kind of deal. So there's no doubt that there's multiple voices in the room, and they got to clean it up.
And listen, I don't mean to get on my little soapbox here, but I'm gonna go ahead and get on it.
Hold on, Joe.
I have no problem, and I think it's a good thing to get on the same page, right? That's clearly that's what I think the great teams do, right? At some point, there was issues with Philadelphia, but at some point, they got on the same page. But this is my thing is I'm about over the excuses and what I think a bit of a pass from some in the fan base, in the media, about the players and their poor execution. Like, this has been laid at the feet, past the players, in a space that to me has felt strong. Well, like there's a couple and I'll take the number one, to where like Dalton Schultz, for example. There's and I know how you feel about him, but there's a lot of thoughts of like, hey man, he was put in a tough situation, and I'm not going to say he wasn't always.
I meant to bring that up, Lopez today.
I heard that too. It's not that he like. I'm not going to say he was always put in. Yes, the Jonathan Renard block him one on one thing. Yes, that is probably not the best space.
Oh no!
But let's just be honest. You're paying him $12 million a year. I'll be damned, man. It wasn't just defensive ends he was blowing assignments against.
Yeah.
Right? He was blowing it against linebackers. He was blowing it against safeties. There were struggles on double teams with other people. Like, it wasn't just he got caught with with George Karloftis or something like that. Like, I'll be damned. Clint came on the air towards the end of the season saying, stop it, Bobby, you just can't run play side. And that means the ball going to where the side he's lined up on. You just can't run play side. No, man, that has to be an issue to the player. Damn it, we're paying you $12 million. We got to be able to run the football to your side. We can't just telegraph everything out there. The offensive line, like, man, y'all got to be able to pick up stunts. Y'all got to be able to do little things. Yeah, I'm not saying the coaching didn't have anything to do with it, but we've given, like, these guys a pass. These receivers running routes right into each other and bringing defenders right there. That's not always coaching. That stuff wasn't happening the year before like that. So, I mean, yes, they have – and now they don't have no excuses because they didn't got rid of Napoleon and everybody. They got rid of these guys. But, like, I just think, like, they have gotten a little bit too much of a pass. Like, oh, man, you shouldn't be able to expect Dalton Schultz. No, Dalton Schultz got to be able to block somebody. He is an NFL tight end, and he is a well-paid NFL tight end. He's got to be able to line up on the outside, and they got to be able to run the football to his side sometimes. Like, that's like, I'm sorry, man. Like, that ain't all the coaching.
Wow. You know, look, I agree. There you go, T. I agree wholeheartedly. I mean, the coaching was not good, but the just willingness to get your ass whooped week in, week out and be okay with it. That's why I believe there should have been multiple voices. I believe there should have been fights in the O-line room. I believe there should have been some chaos on the offensive side of the ball, some toxicity, if you will. Because the play and what was going on was unacceptable. To anybody that wants to win and is a true professional and has any level of leadership and alpha in them, like, you should have been absolutely ready to fight every Monday after the Sunday performances on the offensive side of the football. So I'm with you.
You remember, y'all fellas remember when Zach Greinke went through that stage where he used to just kind of tell people what pitches were coming?
Yep.
Remember he would tell people?
God, I love that, man.
I honestly think that defensive lines could have walked up to the line of scrimmage and said, hey, we're going to run a we're going to run a TN stunt right here.
Yeah.
This is what we're going to do. We're going to run a stunt. Hey, he's going to come in. I'm going to loop behind him. And I think the Texans wouldn't be able to stop it.
You remember that time we saw Manny Fresh and he could not take – he got stopped with the Super Bowl. Yeah. He got stopped 5 times in 20 steps. Like, I kid you not.
And that was on Media Row.
Yes, pitchers. Yeah. Guys getting – it was like – I was like, dang, man, if he had to go take a piss, if that's where he was going, like, he going to pee on himself.
Hey, the crazy thing, though, and this is what kills me about, like, the gatekeepers, whether it's for an athlete at a media day or it's, like, the athletes that are – you know, the people that are responsible for communications with teams and stuff like that. Like, don't get me wrong, I didn't play for many teams that won a lot of games, but I played with some huge stars in that moment. And I never one time, even as much of an a-hole as Troy Aikman can be, and he can be a real a-hole, I never once saw him, like, be bothered by people approaching him.
Yeah.
Like, Emmitt can't get, obviously, you know, now Emmitt can't get enough of it. Like Emmitt,
now,
Emmitt can't go to big. Emmitt's like,
I got to
get in the middle of it. Like, you see Emmitt. Like, I would argue that the majority of those guys enjoy the hell out of it. But yet, as some of us see, it's like, man, you feel like you're bothering them.
Yeah, that's my thing.
And I would add this. I have never will. I think people that do it are assets. Don't be approaching these fools. It's one thing to maybe be putting them out and hopefully they let you know. Don't be approaching these fools when they're trying to have a meal. They're legitimately like at a restaurant or something and they have food in front of them. When I see that happen,
where did you get Craig Biggio? Did you get him in the bathroom?
In the pisser. So not the table, but the pisser, yeah. You're good.
Yeah,
I remember you got him in the bathroom.
We were standing there with ourselves in our hands together, me and old Craig Biggio. Quite a moment. That's a Hall of Famer in me, just right there pissing together.
And so you got through.
Did you get his? I mean, you got his autograph.
You threw your arm around him, took a pic. Huh?
Did you get it?
Did
you wash your hands?
Oh, I thought you did. I thought at some point you got back and said, "Hey, man."
No, because again,
favorite player. All right.
Again, I'm known to do this. I get the pictures with the celebrities or athletes, but in the men's room at the restaurant, just didn't feel right.
It didn't feel like the right time. Huh?
So I said, "Sir, truly glad to meet you. You were my childhood hero." Nice talking with you at the pisser. Best of luck.
For you,
I peeked over that partition, and I'll be honest with you, I'm a little disappointed.
I think it was a mistake. Was a mistake for you. Like, he's your guy. He's your favorite. When you went to Academy Sports, went and bought one of the City Connect jerseys, and you bought a Craig Biggio jersey. How many times are you going to have that opportunity?
That's a clean jersey.
We'll make
it
one
for
you. It
is clean, ain't it?
We'll make you for it.
Yeah, if y'all didn't know out there, they're making these new City Connects with the old guys' names on it. It's pretty badass.
Text line roll through. That's before you knew Bobby was a tyrant.
Yeah, badass Bobby.
Now your back's going to hurt because you just pulled landscaping duty.
I think more of Bobby because he got fired.
What?
Like, Bobby as a man. What? Like, Bobby as a man.
What?
He didn't request him to fire him, though.
Like, he gained cool points for you because he got fired.
He gained cool points for me because, like, the way this is all happening, like, badass Bobby, it's all getting put on him. And he was like, hell no, I ain't changing. Y'all need to block y'all's ass. Y'all need to block. Y'all get paid to do this stuff. Y'all,
dang it,
little
Bobby.
Did he know it was going to cost him his job.
Yeah.
You ever watch Bobby?
Yeah, I don't know if I don't know if I did.
Badass Bobby.
Badass Bobby. Speaking of badasses, Nick Caserio, as the fellas had him 7:30 today. You missed it. Go back. Check that out on Payne and Pendergast Hour 2. He talked about the potential of Jalen Petrie getting an extension. As we know, Derek Stingley got one after year 3. He's eligible now. Nico Collins got one. Titus Howard in the past got an extension. He talks about the potential of Jalen Petrie getting one.
Yeah, I'd say we're having conversations with a number of players. And, you know, we've talked about this. You guys kind of know how we operate. Mm-hmm. Like, we're pretty flexible and open-minded. Like, we don't have a finite, well, if, you know, we don't get it done by September 1st and it's off the table. I think at some point, for everybody's best interest, you might say, hey, look, let's try to figure this out, you know, over the next few weeks and or whenever. Don't really want to comment specifically on any individual discussions with any players, but I would say always open-minded to having a dialogue with the player and representatives and trying to figure out an agreement that everybody feels comfortable with, because the goal is for both entities and both parties to be happy with how it went. You don't want to have, we're not trying to quote unquote win a negotiation. Yeah. We don't believe in that. That's not how we operate. You want something where the organization wins and the player feels valued and they feel like, you know, you've made them a priority. So, you know, we'll work through those things. But Jalen's been a good player. It's the day he walked in the building. He's had a significant impact on our program. That's a type of player that you'd like to have around here as long as possible. So we'll kind of see how all that works itself out.
You heard it there. Jalen is a good player that you like to have around here as long as possible. That's the type of guy you want to have around here. And look, I think we knew, Derek Stingley's going to get paid. He's going to get it. He's going to be one that stays here. I think maybe we thought it was quick at the time on Nico Collins, and clearly we were wrong on that. But you could see now, you know, he has these back-to-back years. That's a guy that you want to keep and you want to sign and remain here. And they've done it. They did it. And Nick, even before D'Amico, but especially now with D'Amico, they've done a really good job of seeing those guys and pinpointing them and rewarding them and taking care of them. We know there are others to come, right? Will Anderson falls in the group. He is he is going to get paid from this organization. CJ Stroud is probably in that camp. Not probably. CJ Stroud is in that camp. He is going to get paid from this organization.
God bless, brother.
There are obvious ones you're seeing that fit that. Kamari Laster, he keeps this up. The odds are he probably falls into that category as well. Is Jalen Petrie in that? 713-572-4610, the Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line, YouTube and Twitch. Does Jalen Petrie, second round pick, you heard how Nick Caserio spoke about him. Does he fall into that category of, that's a guy that you feel comfortable they're going to sign and bring in? Does he fall into the Nico Stingley Will category? CJ
Nico
category.
Stingley Will CJ. No. No, he doesn't. I think from a talent perspective, just an overall talent perspective, even in, if we're gauging talent just on the position that they play, not the impact that they have in the game, like the ability to play that, like, it's still an unknown with Jalen Petrie. We're talking about a year, 2 years ago, where he's standing next to Nico in critical moments. I mean, next to D'Amico in critical moments of the game. Yep. And then this last year played well, but had ended up injured, right?
They found his role, and he really excelled at it.
Yeah, I just don't know how you've seen enough football from Jalen Petrie. Now, I will say this. I don't think I wouldn't even entertain the conversation if it weren't for the understanding that I think Jalen Petrie is an elite human being. Like I think Jalen Petrie is an alpha. I think he is absolutely a authentic, genuine, sincere leader. I think people gravitate to Jalen Petrie. I think the instincts are through the roof. These are all things that take a player's value and drive it through the roof if that player is a really good player and can stay healthy. Now, in Jalen,
especially with these guys,
yeah, who are making and these guys value it big time, right?
This isn't certain other places don't value it as much.
So, to me, the Jalen Petrie conversation, because of the injuries, because of whatever happened 2 years ago, it's going to be hard for all the things, all the positives about Jalen Petrie to drive his value through the roof. But I do think it drives his value to be higher than your fan that watches and has seen kind of some up and down stuff over the last couple of years. Like, I think his value is going to be higher than we think because of that. So we'll see. But no, I do not think he's on the same level of gotta have, can't replace type of player in this organization right now.
Of the guys we've
correct, the guys you mentioned.
Yeah, and I don't even know if Titus fits that, but. But
no, I think I think Jalen Petrie's in the Titus range,
and Titus got paid. So he did. But from the text line coming through, someone said sounds like Jalen's getting traded by those words. the player, he's in that category by intangibles, not by play. I'd rather have C.J. Gardner-Johnson than J.P. Because of everything you said at the end, that's why it's difficult for him. Because he doesn't play a position of that is really difficult to replace, right? And his role.
Yeah, nickel defenders are typically pretty easy to replace.
Yeah, much easier than a number one wide receiver, a all-pro corner.
Correct.
A quarterback.
Edge rusher.
Edge rusher. Right. Those are some of the most important positions and most difficult ones to find.
Well that's why I even said if we just say, okay, of the nickel defenders, like don't it's obviously you can't compare like what you're talking about there is quarterback to nickel defender, edge rusher to nickel defender, lockdown corner to nickel defender. Like that's not apples to apples. But if you just talk about that player in that particular position, he still has left a lot to be desired in the staying healthy department.
Listen, I don't care personally what they say. They just got rid of their most accomplished player, who's 29 years old, because he, to me, doesn't fit the culture they're trying to set. And there may not be another person, maybe Will Anderson. Outside of Will Anderson, there is not another person on the roster that is everything that they want and believe in when it comes to their culture than Jalen Petrie. And that's why I think it makes it difficult to say,
yeah,
just because of his play. Because I do. I think they could probably replace. Like right now, we've talked about this defense potentially being a top five defense. Right now, if you're honest with yourself, if everything they have right now on the roster, if they took Jalen Petrie off as the nickel defender and they went with what they have right now, do you still believe they'd be a top five defense?
Yes, I do.
So just so from on the field,
I believe they'd figure out that nickel defender issue.
From on the field part, it's not. But I think as we said there, they weigh that other part,
the intangibles, the it factor, the leadership,
big time,
absolutely
right. They weigh that, and I think
they should.
Yeah, and I think they will reward that.